Hey, this is DJ Detour, and this is my show Behind the Bit on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. Today, for my first segment, I'm going to be talking about some basic care of horses, and I'm going to talk about specifically some grooming, bathing, and other regular maintenance that you would need to have and do if you had a horse. So first, I'm going to talk about grooming. Grooming is something that you would do if you see your horse on a daily basis, then you would brush your horse on a daily basis. I, because I'm a college student, sadly don't get out to see my horse every single day, but when I do get out there to see him, it's one of the first things that I do is groom my horse. And it's an important thing to do with your horse because it's going to keep their coat healthy and it's going to keep them cleaner and better looking. And so I'm going to talk about some different types of brushes, what they look like and what they do. First is a curry brush, which is usually an oval shaped rubbery brush. Sometimes they have hard plastic ones too, but I don't personally like those as much. And there will be a handle for one side on your hand, or one side of the brush for your hand. And then on the other side of the brush, you'll see a circular pattern with a larger circle on the outside going to a smaller circle on the inside of rubber bumps. And how you brush your horse with this brush is in a circular motion. And the main thing that it does is it helps get all the dirt loose that's underneath their top coat. And so it'll make it easier when you use these other brushes I'm going to talk about. It's going to make it easier to get everything out of their coat. And next, there is a hard brush. And hard brushes and soft brushes are kind of similar. Hard brushes have stiffer bristles and soft brushes have softer bristles. And they can both either be made of an actual type of hair, or there is also a lot of synthetic ones that people use. And so usually what you would do is after you curry your horse, you would use a hard brush to get off all that dirt that you just got out of their coat. And then you would follow that up with a soft brush. And then for a horse's face, you're not going to want to use any of these because they're going to be a little too harsh on their face and on their skin, and it's not going to feel good and they're not going to like it. So there's brushes that are specifically for their face called face brushes, and they're really, really soft. So when you brush your horse's face, usually they're going to like it, and sometimes it'll, you know, they're really itchy and they like getting their face brushed as long as it's not too rough. There's also one of my favorite grooming tools, which is called a grooming block. And usually they come and they're a square and they kind of look like a pumice rock. And you use those in the direction of their fur. And they are amazing. They kind of do the work of a shedding blade, which is a metal blade, and there's a couple different types. There's one that looks just like a loop, and there's another one that's circular patterns, and they have small metal teeth on one side, and you brush your horse in the direction of their fur with that, and it helps get out during the times of the year that your horse is shedding. Is going to help get all of that extra hair off of them, because otherwise it ends up all over your clothes, and it's just not that much fun to have horse hair all over everything you own. So it helps reduce that for the owner and get all the extra junk off the horse. So grooming blocks kind of do the job of a curry comb and a shedding blade all at the same time. So like I had said, you use it in the direction of the horse's fur and it gets out a whole bunch of dirt and a whole bunch of excess hair, and it makes you feel very accomplished when you're done using it. There's also different types of combs and brushes that you can use in your horse's mane and tail that will help get all the tangles and all that good stuff out of there. And those are some of the basic tools that equestrians use to brush their horses. There's also some products made. Most of them are called like shine products, like Vetrolin Shine, which is one of my favorites, that you use after you're done brushing your horse, and it helps restore vitamins and minerals in your horse's coat, and it also makes them look shiny and clean. And there's a bunch of different brands, and they also, a lot of them also include sunscreen in them, so your horse's skin is protected as well as their coat is protected from bleaching, which is really cool. Especially, I have a really bright colored horse, and when he gets sun bleached, it's just not the same. He's much prettier when he has his full color in his coat. And the next thing I'm going to talk about is bathing your horse. And bathing your horse is something that you don't want to do all the time. You can, if your horse gets sweaty or something like that after you're working with them or go on a ride, you'll want to spray, you'll want to like hose them off and get all the sweat out of their fur, but you're not necessarily going to want to give them a bath a lot, especially during wintertime. Right now, right now the weather's kind of weird, but generally when it's colder out, you're not going to want to give your horse a bath as often, because when you shampoo your horse's coat, it's going to take all the oils out of their fur. And the reason you don't want to do that is because during the wintertime, the oils in their fur are one of the things that help keep them warm. So you're not going to want to do, I don't wash my horse at all during wintertime unless it's extremely necessary for whatever reason. You're not going to want to do it if you don't have to. But during the summertime, I definitely give my horse baths because, you know, every now and again, it's very good for him. And when you're giving your horse a bath, you shampoo pretty much everywhere. I don't shampoo my horse's face because he does not like getting his face sprayed with water. Some horses enjoy that. A lot of them give you nasty looks and don't appreciate it very much. And there's a bunch of different types of shampoo that you can use on your horse. There's shampoos that we call them bluing shampoos, but they make your horse whiter. There's also darkening shampoos. So if you have a black horse and you use a darkening shampoo, it's going to make them appear darker than they really are. And there's also brightening shampoos for all those colors in between white and black. So you can use a brightening shampoo that's just going to help your horse's coat color stand out more. And there's also other stuff like antifungal shampoos that you would use if your horse had some type of fungus. Like there's one called rain rot that a lot of times horses will get on their legs when they stand in mud. So that's one reason you might give your horse a bath during wintertime, is if they have this fungus on them that makes all their hair fall out in patches, which is not good. And you can use an antifungal shampoo to get rid of that. And there's also something a lot of people may have heard of before, which is mane and tail products. And they have a shampoo and conditioner, and they sell those now in grocery stores and CVS and a whole bunch of other places. But we also sell them, you know, we sell them at the feed store that I work at, and I've used them on myself as well as on my horse, and they're great products. And there's also conditioners for horses, which you would not use all over their entire body because that would just be a waste of all your conditioner. Usually if you're going to use that on your horse, you only use it on their mane and tail, and it really just helps get out a lot of tangles and dreadlocks that may have occurred over them being out in the pasture and doing what they do. Another thing that you have to keep in mind for maintenance of horses is their feet. And whenever I groom my horse, I also pick his feet, which is something that's very important. And when you pick a horse's foot, you will lift their leg up and you hold their foot. And a hoof pick looks like a little pick. It's usually they have a metal end and then they have a plastic handle. And you use that around, I had talked about on my last show, a horse's frog, which is on the bottom of their foot, and it's a triangle shape, and it's very tender, and it's kind of an outdent from the rest of their hoof. And what you do is you use a hoof pick around that to clean out all the dirt or rocks that could have gotten stuck in their feet over them being out in the pasture or wherever they are. Because if they keep those things lodged in their feet, things like stone bruises can happen, which I also talked about on my show last week, which is essentially they get bruises on the bottom of their feet and it's very painful for them. So it's a very important thing to do. And along with that, horses their feet grow just like our fingernails grow, and they're actually made of up of the a similar material. And my horse gets his feet trimmed and reshod every 8 weeks, which 6 to 8 weeks is pretty regular. And not all horses need shoes on their feet. A lot of horses go barefoot, which is really nice, especially because it's a lot less expensive. So every 6 to 8 weeks, they just get their feet trimmed. So it's kind of like, you know, when we clip our fingernails, it's not like it's a painful thing to them or anything. It's just maintenance, because if their feet get too long, they can go lame and be in pain, and nobody wants that for their horse. So, and if your horse has shoes, then every 6 to 8 weeks, they get their shoes taken off, they get their feet trimmed, and then they get a new shoe put back on. And along with that, you also need to have the vet come out to do your vaccinations on a regular basis, unless you can do them yourselves, which a lot of people also do. And they get vaccinated on a regular basis for things like West Nile, which in humans is not as deadly as it is in horses. It's fatal to horses. And I actually had a friend whose horse got West Nile many years ago. And he had to be put down after it because it paralyzes their legs and it's not fun. So we want to vaccinate our horses. So usually West Nile and a whole bunch of other good stuff. You also want to keep up to date with your horse's teeth. They need to get, we call it their teeth floated. They get their teeth basically ground down evenly, because otherwise it can cause malnutrition along with sores and ulcers in their mouth. So you want to do that on a regular basis, depending on your horse, because it changes from horse to horse. You also want to keep up to date with worming, which a lot of different people have different thought processes on that. Personally, I worm my horse every 3 to 4 months, and you change what you use each time depending on, again, what your train of thought is. There's a bunch of different types of wormers for horses, and it's definitely something you want to keep up to date on, because worms in horses is bad news and can cause a lot of malnutrition and other problems. So that is going to wrap it up for my segment on some basic horse care. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
Your cause is righteous and just. Fight. The enemy's destruction's a must. Because you are the mighty and wise. Fight. Fight. We cut them right down to size. Only the strong can survive. No question who will stay alive. Fight on, brave warrior, until they open up the door for you. Fight on, brave warrior. Yes, if they don't, we're going to kick it. Fire!
Hey, this is DJ Detour back with my show Behind the Bit on radio.dominican.edu. And for this segment, I'm going to talk a little bit about some basic tack and equipment and what they're used for. So one of the most basic pieces of tack would be a halter. And a halter, when you go out to get your horse, what you use is a halter. And usually halters are a flat nylon material and they go around your horse's muzzle and also behind their ears, and there's a buckle right behind their left ear, which is where you would buckle and unbuckle it to take it on and off. And it is on the left side of the horse because we do pretty much everything on the left side of the horse. You lead the horse on their left side. You also get on and off of a horse on their left side. And attached to a halter is what we call a lead rope. And a lead rope is what you would hold while you're leading your horse around. And there's also another variation of halter, which is called a rope halter. And a rope halter is made of rope. And usually they are one piece or two pieces attached that you can't take apart. And it's the same design as a regular nylon halter, but it's made of rope. And some people prefer one to the other for various reasons. Rope halters are sometimes when a horse is tied up, they'll pull back if they get scared or if something happens. And a lot of things that people worry about is them flipping over. And it's very unfortunate when it happens and you try to avoid it at all costs. So one reason that a lot of people like traditional nylon halters opposed to rope halters is because the metal hardware on them usually will break if your horse pulls back. But there's also other solutions to that. There's hardware that you can get to attach to things so that when they pull back, it'll slowly release. Anyways, that's a little bit about the halter. And next, there is a lunge line. And a lunge line is usually about 30 feet long, and it's flat nylon as well with a clip on one side. And you would clip it to your horse's halter, and it's one way to exercise your horse is you would stand in the middle and your horse would be going in a circle around you at different rates of speed depending on what you are asking of your horse. And another thing to kind of go along with that is what's called a lunge whip. And a lunge whip is a long whip with an end on it, and that is used a lot of times when lunging your horse to encourage them to go faster. It's not meant to hit the horse or anything like that, just to make that clarification. It's just meant as an extension of your arm, essentially. There are also different types of boots that we put on our horse for different reasons. First is the bell boot, and there's different variations of bell boots. There's all rubber ones. There's ones that will be made of material with Velcro that are easier to take on and off. And bell boots will be put on a horse a lot of times when they do something which is called overreaching, where their hind legs will clip their front heels when they walk or at different speeds. And, you know, your horse can cause itself injury, which again is something you try to avoid, and bell boots will be put on horses to try to avoid that from happening. They can also be put on upside down, and usually, should have explained this a moment ago, the boot, it's kind of like it's a circular shape, and it will be placed on their ankle going down over their heel and hoof, and you can also place them upside down on a horse's ankle if you want to prevent. Sometimes horses will give themselves bed sores when they lay down, so that's one way you could also prevent your horse from giving itself a bed sore. There are also sport medicine boots. You can get them for your horse's front legs as well as their back legs. And one purpose that people use these for is to absorb shock. And this sports medicine boot is the bottom part of a horse's leg. and you Velcro it around, and it helps absorb shock when they're doing different types of exercises and styles of riding. And I had talked about on my last show one of the disciplines, which is called jumping, as well as cross country. And in these two disciplines, horses are jumping over obstacles and landing on the other side, and sports medicine boots will help absorb the impact on their legs. So that is one use of those. There are also saddles, which is the usually leather piece of equipment that goes on a horse's back. There's also sometimes synthetic ones that some people prefer synthetic, some people prefer leather. And there are different types of saddles for different types of riding. There's English saddles and Western saddles. And within that, there's all-purpose English saddles. There's dressage saddles, endurance saddles, and those kind of, they all look pretty similar. And what a lot of people are probably more familiar with are Western saddles, which have the horn in the front of the saddle, and they usually have a square skirt on them. Which is, you know, if you go to Mexico and ride horses on the beach, that's the type of saddle they're going to use, because they are pretty easy for beginner riders to learn with, because it has something for you to hold on to, which can make things easier. And within Western saddles, there's different styles of saddles as well. There's roping saddles, barrel racing saddles, cutting saddles, trail saddles, and they all have just slightly different features, and some are also more comfortable to different people. And I know that for a fact, because I definitely prefer barrel racing saddles to, for example, roping saddles, because the barrel racing saddle, I like the way the seat is and the way it makes me sit better. It's more comfortable for me personally, and that changes from rider to rider. There's also bridles, which is the piece of equipment that goes on a horse's face. And again, with these, there is synthetic as well as leather. And there's different types of bridles for English and Western. And again, different ones within there. And most bridles have a bit attached to the lower part of the bridle, which the bit goes in the horse's mouth and is usually metal, sometimes metal covered with plastic. And there are lots of different types of bits as well. And just to name a few, there's snaffle bits, and within snaffle bits, there's D-rings, loose rings, egg butt snaffles, and I could continue going on and on. But depending on what type of bit it is, the type that I use on my horse, I use a snaffle bit on my horse, and I use a couple different variations of it. And one of them is a D-ring snaffle. And on those ones, the part that you would see on the outside of a horse's mouth, it looks like a D. And then on the inside of the horse's mouth, it's two pieces of metal that is broken in the middle. And you can also get bits in different thicknesses. The thicker the bit is, the less harsh it is. The thinner it is, it's going to be more harsh on your horse. And also, just so people know, whoever's listening, the bit is not something that a rider relies on completely for control over their horse. So when you're riding, you don't want to have all your commands coming from your hands, which are directly attached to a horse's mouth through the reins. You want to also be giving them commands through your seat and your legs, as well as voice commands. And in addition to bridles and bits, there are also pieces of equipment that the rider would use to for different purposes. And one of those would be whips. And there's different types of whips. As I talked about earlier, there are lunge whips. There's also dressage whips and crops or bats. And dressage whips are quite a bit longer than crops or bats. The crops and bats are usually about a foot, sometimes a little bit more, sometimes 14 inches. And those are used in a lot of English disciplines like jumping and pleasure riding. And dressage whips are usually used in the dressage discipline. They're also very useful when you are teaching your horse ground manners, because they are longer than a crop or a bat. They're usually about 2 feet long, sometimes longer, sometimes shorter, depending on what exactly you're using it for. There are also spurs, which are used in both the English and the Western discipline. Most of them in the English discipline, and spurs are attached to the back of a rider's boot, and what they're used for is not to, they're not used like you might see in movies to like stab our horse's sides. They're definitely not used like that. They're used as an extension of your leg, and so rather than kicking your horse, all you have to do is give them a little squeeze with these, and you will get your point across much quicker, and you will have to do a lot less, and it's also going to be nicer for the horse, because they don't, I personally don't think I would like getting kicked. And so there's different types of spurs for English and Western disciplines. In English, a lot of times they just are a little metal nub looking spur. And again, like I said, you just use those to squeeze. And a lot of times for Western spurs, they will be, they go out from the back of your boot, and then there's a rowel on them, which is a rolling piece of metal. Sometimes they have like waves on them. Sometimes they are sharper than others. Not that any of them are very sharp at all. They're all very blunt. And those, when you use Western spurs on a horse, you just use them to roll them on your horse's side. And it gets, again, your message across very quickly about what you want. And it's easy to communicate to your horse that way. So that is some basic tack and equipment that is often used. And that is going to wrap it up for this talk. And we will be back in a couple minutes. You're listening to radio.dominican.edu with my show Behind the Bit.
In the night, she's a restless spirit on an endless flight.
Ooh, witchy woman, see how high she flies. Ooh, witchy woman, she got the moon in her eyes. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is DJ Detour back on Penguin Radio with my show Behind the Bit. On this segment, I'm going to be talking about some horse health as well as some purchasing questions if you ever to consider getting a horse. So first, with some horse health, I'm going to talk about some ways to prepare you for any type of emergency that could happen if you had a horse and what you should have in your first aid kit. So I have a first aid kit, and I have actually more than one first aid kit. I have one that would go in my trailer as well as one that I have in my locker at the barn. And I have mine in a large plastic container that seals, because you want to keep everything in there clean as you possibly can. And some of the things that my first aid kit includes that I think are very important are cotton rolls, which can be used if your horse gets wounded in any way. You can use that to wrap the wound. I also have vet wrap, which is a wonderful product, and I have used on myself many times to wrap, like when I injured my ankle, I used it to wrap my ankle, and they are way better than ACE bandages. They stick to themselves, and you can also, when you're done with them, you can throw them away, which is really nice. So vet wrap is definitely an important thing to have in your first aid kit, as well as varying sizes of gauze pads, which I have non-stick gauze pads in my first aid kit, and the varying sizes are for depending on what size wound your horse gets. It's easier to just have a bunch of different sizes rather than cut it to make it the correct size. And that brings me to the next item you should hopefully have in your first aid kit, which is a pair of good scissors. And you can use those for a lot of various different things. You can use them, not to be gruesome or anything, but if your horse had a piece of skin that was dead and you needed to cut it off, I know I've used mine for that purpose before, as well as for cutting any of the cotton rolls, gauze pads, all that good stuff that you should have in your first aid kit. Another good thing to have in there is a thermometer, because that's definitely one indicator of certain things that could be going on with your horse. So you should have a thermometer, and one thing to note with the thermometer that you have is that you want to tie a string onto the end of the thermometer, because they are rectal thermometers, and there's a possibility if you're not holding on tight that you can lose these things, and that's why you want to have a string attached to them, which is a good thing to know, because otherwise lots of bad things could happen. So you want to make sure you have a string attached to your thermometer. Another important thing to have is betadine. And betadine you can use to clean any cuts, wounds, abrasions that your horse could possibly get when out in the pasture or doing whatever your horse is doing. You would also want to include a pair of gloves or a couple pairs of gloves in your first aid kit. One, because if your horse has a wound, you need to make sure it's clean, and you don't always... It's a better idea if you have a clean pair of gloves rather than just your bare hands, as well as betadine also stains your skin and or clothes, so that's a good reason to wear gloves if it's just a minor wound. You should also have a stethoscope in your first aid kit to listen to your horse's heart, as well as gut sounds, which you can usually hear without a stethoscope, but it is important to have one in there just in case. Cotton balls or cotton pads, which I have in my first aid kit, and I usually use those to apply betadine if my horse gets any type of injury. Another good thing to have in there is nitrofurazone. And the name of the product that is nitrofurazone that you see in most feed stores is called Furazone. And it is a neon yellow product, and it is a gel, and you can use that. It's kind of like a Neosporin for horses, and you can use that on any cut or wound after you clean it with some betadine. Put some of that on there and you will probably be good after that. another important thing to have in there is Epsom salt. And Epsom salts are very important to have in there if your horse gets any type of abscess in their foot, or my horse got one on his cheek when I first got him, and I definitely used some Epsom salt, which helps get everything to the surface and then helps drain it. And you should also have a cup or some type of container, or if you have a bucket that you usually have next to your container of first aid stuff, that is another important thing to have. So you'll have something to put your Epsom salt in or other things that you could end up using. Another good thing to have in there is called Ichthamol. And Ichthamol is a product that I would strongly advise you wear gloves. It looks like a black tar kind of consistency, and it's made up of fish guts and some other stuff. And it's a very good product, but I would never want to touch it with my hands. It smells disgusting. You don't want to get it on your clothes, but it is very useful. One of the things you can use it for is to help drain. If your horse has an abscess, you'd put it on there and it helps drain it. And that's something that you could leave on there overnight, because it's, you know, I couldn't stay up all night doing Epsom salt soaks on my horse. So you can put some Ichthamol on there and it'll help drain it while you're not there. Another thing that is very good for is if your horse has an area on their body where they are getting just attacked by flies, it's going to help keep the flies away. And one of my favorite products is Vetresin. And Vetresin you can use, I've used it on myself, I've used it on my dog, I've used it on my cat, I've used it, of course, on my horse. And what the product does is it mimics what an animal's body makes to heal wounds. So it's a very amazing product. I would highly recommend it. At the feed store that I work at, we've even had people come in who get it to use on themselves for pink eye. And I guess it works. I have not tried it for that personally, but from what people have told me, it works on that. And you can use it on a whole range of different things, like post-surgical sites, scratches, puncture wounds. The list goes on and on. It's a really great product that you can use on almost anything. So I would definitely say that is a must for anyone's first aid kit. And I know it's a must in my first aid kit. And I actually even have some Vetresin in my glove compartment in my truck, because that is how often I've ended up using it. And next, I'm going to talk about some advice and questions for if you were to be looking for a horse. And my first piece of advice would be, don't go out there and just buy a horse. That is a terrible idea. If you don't know a whole lot about horses, go sponsor a horse or take lessons or do something first, because they are a huge responsibility. And some questions that are definitely important if you do decide to go buy a horse, some questions to ask their current owner or whoever you will be meeting with when you go to see the horse is, first of all, why are they selling the horse? Because if it's for medical problems, you definitely want to know if the horse has had any medical problems or major injuries. Or a lot of times, especially right now, people are selling them because they don't have the money to keep them, and that is a much more comforting reason than my horse has a major medical problem and that's something you want to know about. Another good question to ask is how the horse was trained and how often they are used or ridden and how they are ridden. So you know what this horse has been doing, what it does on a daily basis, and what it was trained and may or may not know how to do still currently. Another important thing to ask is what types of environment the horse has been exposed to. Like, has the horse been taken to shows? Is it good if it's at the show? Does it get really stressed out? Has it been taken to places like the beach or parades? Not that any of that is a must, but it's definitely a good thing to know before you get the horse, so you know what you're getting yourself into if you plan on doing any of those things. Because if it's your horse's first time, I know the first time I took my horse in a parade, he's very calm, could care less about a plastic bag falling on his head, which a lot of horses would freak out. But he, I found out, does not like balloons at all, and I found out the hard way. and we made it through the parade okay, but it's definitely, you know, I was glad that I knew he was not, he hadn't experienced any of that before, so I was better prepared. And some other good things to ask is if the horse has any behavioral problems. For example, cribbing, which is when horses chew on wood, or weaving, which is a nervous habit or a bored habit where horses will stand like at a gate and they'll kind of, it looks kind of like they're dancing, but they're really stressed out and they kind of move back and forth from one leg to the other. And so it's good to make sure that you know about any bad habits or anything like that that your horse might have. You also want to make sure that your horse is, or the horse, maybe your horse, is up to date on vaccinations as well as worming. I would not advise ever purchasing a horse if they are not up to date on all of that stuff. You also want to know how long that owner has had the horse, or how many owners has the horse had, and if they know any knowledge about the horse's previous life with another owner. Another good thing to ask is the horse shod? Does the horse have shoes? Does he go barefoot? How often do they get their feet done? Because that's going to give you a little bit of an indication on how expensive that one little piece is going to be, along with lots of other stuff. You also want to ask if you can see the horse's medical record, or if you can call their vet to talk to their vet about that horse in specific. One thing that I did was I asked my horse's previous owner if I could have him on a trial period. So I had my horse for 2 weeks before I completely decided if I wanted to get him or if I didn't want to get him. And a couple of things that this is beneficial for is, sadly, some people drug horses when you go to try them out. So they'll be really calm and cool and they'll be all nice. And if you take them on trial, and one way to know that they could have been drugged when you went to go see them is they turn all wacky and crazy. And that's something you want to know before you decide you want to have them for good, is if they are wacky and crazy. You can also kind of see in another environment how they are at your barn. Or it was easier for me, especially at the time, to ride him when the previous owner wasn't watching, because that stressed me out a lot. And obviously the horse can tell when you're stressed out. So it kind of gives you a whole bunch of more perspectives on the way that that horse really acts. So those are a couple questions that you would want to ask if you were interested in buying a horse to their previous owner. And I also talked about in this segment some things that you should definitely have in your first aid kit out at your barn or in your trailer. So that's going to wrap it up for this section. We'll be back in a few minutes on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
You say you're looking for someone never weak but always strong to protect you and defend you. Whether you are right or wrong, someone to open each and every door, but it ain't me, babe. No, 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 it ain't me, babe. It ain't me you're looking for, babe. Lightly from the ground. I'm not the one you want, babe. I will only let you down. You say you're looking for someone who will promise never to part. Someone to close his eyes for you, someone to who close his heart. Someone who will die for you and more. But it ain't me, babe. No, no, no. It ain't me, babe. It ain't me you're looking for, babe.
Hey, this is DJ Detour back with my show Behind the Bit on radio.dominican.edu for my last segment with some current equine news. So, as of yesterday, individual tickets are now on sale for the Alltech FEI World Equestrian Games, which is at the end, towards the end of this year in Normandy, France. Yesterday marks the opening of the final phase of ticketing. During this phase, more than 200,000 individual tickets will be released for public sale. And before yesterday, tickets were sold only as package deals. They also called them sampling deals, I believe, which was a ticket that would give you access to various different events that are all held on different days. And now that the individual tickets are available, fans will be able to pick which events and they'll be able to schedule what they want to see and not maybe some of the other stuff that they don't want to see. So that's very exciting. And that is going to be at the end of this year, August 23rd to September 7th. And there is a bunch of different disciplines that will be performed, and they are jumping, dressage, eventing, driving, endurance, vaulting, reining, para dressage, and horseball. And I'm going to explain a little bit about each of those. First, jumping. Jumping is a spectacular mix of courage, control, and technical ability. And when you are watching jumping, the horse and rider pair will go over 10 to 13 jumps, and they are all able to be knocked over. And some of these may be double or triple combinations, and penalties occur for each obstacle that is knocked down or refused. Jumping has also produced some of the equestrian sport's most memorable Olympic moments, because jumping is one of the disciplines that is also in the Olympics. Next, dressage is the highest expression of horse training, or that's what most people consider the highest expression of horse training. It's also considered one of the most artistic of the equestrian sports and can be traced as far back as ancient Greece. The horse has to perform at a walk, trot, and canter, and all tests are ridden from memory. And they follow a specific pattern of movements and exercises. Except for, the only exception to that is the freestyle, which is each freestyle is specially choreographed for the horse and rider pair, and that is performed to music. Next is eventing. Eventing is the most well-known, probably, equine sport, because that is also in the Olympics. It is three different disciplines combined, and sometimes people explain it as the equestrian triathlon, and that includes dressage, cross-country, and jumping. So the same horse and rider team have to perform in all three of those, which is very difficult to master. Three completely different disciplines. So that's always an interesting one to watch, and you'll definitely see people's strong suits and where they might be lacking in some skills. Next is driving. Horses have been driven long before they are ridden. Driving is the oldest competitive equestrian sport, but still thrives today. Drivers sit on a vehicle drawn by a single horse or pony, a pair or a team of four horses, and they face three different trials, they call them. The first would be dressage, which is different than the dressage I had talked about earlier. In this dressage, it means that the team must perform specific exercises in a space, and they all are, again, from memory, but it's different than the other dressage I had previously talked about. And they also have one of the other phases, which is called marathon, and it is exactly how it sounds. It tests a whole bunch of different things, one of which being are the horses fit, are the people fit, and the endurance of them. And the last would be obstacle driving, and that is essentially a race where they have obstacles they have to go around, and they don't want to knock any of those over or hit their cart on any of them, because that could end up dangerous and not good. And at the World Equestrian Games, they only compete with teams of four. Endurance is the next discipline I'm going to talk about, and it is a long distance race, which is about 160 kilometers. And they call it a one-day marathon, and that is completed by the horse and rider pair. This passionate sport takes place in the middle of the countryside on a course that contains less than 10% of hard surface roads. So the horse and rider have to be in really good shape, and they have vet checks along the way to make sure that they're all in good health. Reining is a competition that shows the athletic ability of ranch type horses. And next, para dressage. In 2006, para equestrian sports joined a couple other disciplines that are regulated by the FEI with national and international competitions. And this is dressage for individuals who have a disability. All rules and regulations related to competition venues and testing are governed by the same principles as other disciplines. The formula for para equestrian dressage is the same as standard dressage, with tests based on a set program of movements as well as the freestyle. And para equestrian dressage is the only equestrian discipline that is included in the Paralympics, and that has been since 1996. And how they use that in the Paralympics as well as the World Equestrian Games is that they match people with similar functional abilities into groups, and then they compete at those groups. And this means that in the competition, that they are not, I guess you could say, judged on what their disability is, but how well they perform at whatever level of ability they have. Another sport is polo. And in polo, two teams of four riders play on two separate sides of a field with athletic, agile, energetic horses. And they use a mallet to hit a small wooden ball up the field to score on the opposing team's goal. Each team, and every time they make a goal, they switch sides of the team, and there's no goalkeepers. And that's my mom actually got to see polo not too long ago, and she said it was very exciting to watch, and I'm a little jealous. I want to see it, and I think it would be really cool to watch. And in addition to that, another interesting sport, and is the last one I'm going to, or sorry, second to last one, is called horseball. And they play on a field, and they have a ball that has six leather handles on it, and they pass it, and then they would score through a hoop-shaped vertical goal. And they have to do all of this without their feet touching the ground. Riders are both attacking and defensive players, and the game is played in two halves. And the two most important rules of this game is that each team must make a minimum of three passes two, three different players before scoring. And if they don't respect that, the goal is not counted. And the second one would be that players cannot have the ball in their possession for more than 10 seconds. And lastly, I'm going to talk about vaulting. Vaulting is a combination of gymnastics and dance on horseback. And in this, the vaulters perform on the back of a cantering horse. And it really requires a very harmonious relationship between the horse and rider. Vaulting exercises include artistic mounts and dismounts, and other exercises such as shoulder stands, standing exercises, jumps, kneeling exercises. And the horse is guided by a lunger who's holding a lunge line in the center of the circle. Vaulters compete on teams, and there may be no more than three vaulters on a horse at one time. And there's also, in this discipline, they separate the male and the female vaulters into two different categories. And there's also competitions for pairs, which we call pas de deux, and also for team. And that is what's going to be competed at the World Equestrian Games this year. And it was really exciting last year because the World Equestrian Games were held in the United States for the first time. And now they're back in France, but still very exciting. I know my vaulting coach was able to attend in Kentucky last year, and she was actually a volunteer, and she did poop scooping, to be quite blunt. And she got to watch the vaulting section of the World Equestrian Games from the same level that the judges and all the vaulters are at. So she said it was a really cool experience, and she also got to go and watch some of the other disciplines and had a whole lot of fun. So that is going to wrap it up for current equine news. So today I have talked about some basic care of horses, including grooming, bathing, and some regular maintenance. I've also talked about some basic horse equipment and tack. And then I talked about some horse health, how to be prepared for anything that could possibly happen to your horse, and what you should keep in your first aid kit. And I also posed a couple questions that should be asked if you were ever to be interested in buying a horse. So that is going to wrap it up for my show today. You can catch my show Behind the Bit next week on Wednesday from 3 to 4. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. Spirit.